This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore. What are you laughing at, man?
The mad panic by Bob didn't have his proper wipe down time.
It's got to take place before anything can start.
He was panicking.
I've never seen
you panic before.
I can't put the headsets on unless they've been wiped down. I'm sorry. It's just how it works. No offense, Jake.
I'm sure he's very clean.
He's been a little under the weather, so I can't mess with any of that. Opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Coming up today, we got a lot to cover. The Professor John Clayton will be with us at 4 o'clock. We'll talk some baseball with Shannon Dreher. She'll join us at 3:30. Mariners, can you believe their first spring training games are this weekend?
Yeah, happening fast.
There you go. Michael Bump is back with us.
He's sitting in Jim's seat. There must be something about that seat where you forget to turn your button on.
But. Except that Jim's been sitting in that seat for, what, about 9 years now?
Years.
He still screws up the buttons. Wait, which one is on?
Jim one time went up and talked to our manager, Pridemore, Dave Pridemore. He's like, yeah, you know, Dave, I'm not really a radio guy. I'm a writer. And Dave's like, you've been here for 7-8 years, Jim. You're a radio guy.
So okay? Whether you want to be or not, you are that. Mariners get down to business starting this weekend, and we'll talk to Shannon Dreher. It looks like maybe some promising news about Mitch Haniger. We'll get into that conversation with her at 3:30. Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times will join us at 5 o'clock. He's writing about these rules, and we touched on this yesterday. It just came out. Nothing's official to this point unless I've missed a meeting. I don't think I've missed anything to this point, but we talked about the tweet from Adam Schefter yesterday talking about the owners voted to accept the negotiated terms on a new CBA today. Player reps are going to vote on it. They need to go pass it by a 2/3 majority. But what we're talking about is a 17-game season. We're talking about 3 preseason games and the season being longer, more importantly. That'll be interesting.
Right.
And per Adam Schefter, is part of the deal on the table. Players would go from a 47% revenue share under the current deal to 48%. At 16 games, and then go to 48.5% if they go to 17 games. It says shifting $5 billion of revenue to the player side, which is I assume that's for the length of the deal. That's not per year.
That'd be awesome if it was per year.
I don't think that's how that's working annually, but yeah, per the length of the deal.
And it's an estimate.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know that you can quantify. I know, and we'll talk to the professor. He's talked about, you know, new TV deals and all of this, but maybe he's got a better grip on what some of these numbers would be. But that's what an insane amount of money. And how wrong at this point is Mark Cuban? Remember Mark Cuban said something along the lines of, you know, what happens when hogs get fat, they get slaughtered, or he was just talking about the league.
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Is that what it is?
That's what my accountant used to always say to me.
All right, I'll go with that. But he was basically talking about there's going to be a ceiling and the people are getting greedy and the NFL is going to take a hit. And everybody thought, ratings went down a little bit when that whole kneeling thing was going on, and everybody was commenting on it, and everybody going, see?
The concussion thing came out then.
Yeah, but what's happened since? They've gone up.
Right.
They're reaching new highs. There doesn't seem to be a ceiling for this league.
Yeah.
There really does not seem to be a financial ceiling and a popularity ceiling. It just continues to grow. It's amazing the amount of money you're talking about by adding one regular season game and 2 more playoff teams.
Right. Yeah, 2-1 on each side, AFC,
yeah.
NFC.
Yeah, so you'd have 7 on each side.
Well, and that's been my worry about, you know, and one of the things that we've talked about is, and this, for some reason, everybody's putting it on the moms, but that, you know, that was the whole thing, that moms weren't going to let their kids play football if they don't make it safer and they don't do this and that. And, you know, first of all, that's, you know, there's plenty of moms that love football and love that their kids playing. You'd speak to that bump more than anybody. But yeah, I always worried that it wasn't about the supply. It's not about the supply. If that drops off 15-20%, you're still going to have millions and millions of kids wanting to play football. I was always worried about the demand. And so to me on that side, trying to make it safer, I still think it's a fool's errand. But hopefully they'll settle on not going too much further with that. But yeah, I've worried about the demand side. And I brought that up to Trey Wingo. I think it was last year. He said in the year, I think it was 2018 season, He said that of the 100 top television shows that were watched, 53 of them were pro football games, NFL football games. So that means 53. I mean, you know the Super Bowl's up there.
Yeah.
You know the championship games and the playoff games, but there's probably some, you know, Cincinnati versus Atlanta games in there. Where,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing about the demand right now for the NFL.
And yeah, so, NFL regular season beats most postseason in the other sports. Talking about Stanley Cup, talking about NBA, talking about Major League Baseball. I mean, NFL regular season is an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah,
it's just not really competitive.
It's great because football, you get it once a week. Basketball, you got three nights, four nights of basketball. Baseball seems like they're playing every single day. Hockey, they're playing a lot. So when you got 16 games, maybe 19 when you get into the playoffs, like, people are fiending for some football. That's possibly why the XFL has done so well these past couple of weeks, because you have to wait for it. Well, you do play Monday, and you play Thursday, and you got college football on Saturday. So let me take that back. What, 4 days out of the week? But
no, but I
see your favorite team.
Yeah, but not every team's playing on Monday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you're on the right track. What that leads to is each game means so much. You got 162 games in baseball. You got 82 in the NBA. You got 82 in the NHL. You got a lot of opportunity to see these teams, and you don't live and die with every win or loss, yeah. Right? You want to see your team win in every single game, but you lose a baseball game, you're like, all right, well, you got 161 to go. You know, right. Same in the NBA and hockey. Yeah, you lost one. All right, we got 81 more chances. You talk about losing a game in the NFL, that's a big deal. That's Jeez. The equivalent to 10 games in baseball.
Yeah, Graz used to say that all the time on your show, that, you know, where they play four games. Like, that's the first quarter of a football game. But, you know, the other thing about adding this is what I was worried about, was I kind of bristle against everybody gets into the playoffs. Now, that's an exaggeration, obviously. But, you know, I was looking at the other sports. Of the four major sports, the NFL still puts the lowest number of teams percentage-wise into the playoffs. And even with this, because Major League Baseball is now talking about adding four teams. So if they add 47% of the teams will make the playoffs, and even with the Seahawks or the NFL adding two extra teams, so they'd have 14 now in the playoffs, mm-hmm. It's still 43%, and it's way lower. NBA is 53% of the teams get in. You got 30 teams, 16 teams make the playoffs, and then right now it's 31 teams in the NHL right now and 16. Make the playoffs. So it's around 51-52% until they get that the Seattle team going. So yeah, I that was the thing I worried about, the playoffs should be exclusive. It should be a club that you can't just get into by having a 500 record. But even with that, compared to the other sports, and it's just more football. So, you know, at first I kind of was bristled about on that one. I thought maybe that was a little bit too much, but starting to kind of wrap my head around it now. And look, more football, and we'll talk to Condota at 5 o'clock, but he was talking about in his article today about how, you know, that the Super Bowl with that 17-game, season, and then they're going to possibly put a couple of bye weeks in there, that the NFL season and the Super Bowl will go to, like, late February. So, I mean, that's and people are loving it. I mean, look, yeah. We're seeing it with the XFL. People aren't done. I've had a few people say, yeah, I'm all footballed out. But for the most part, everybody, I mean, you look at what's going on down there with the XFL. I mean, they're getting good ratings and lots of crowd down there. People love
NFL's
that game.
Year-round as it is, even without the XFL. I mean, you don't have something every weekend. But for the most part, it takes up your calendar the entire year. You go from the end of the season to the playoffs to the Super Bowl. Then we start talking about the Combine, which is coming up next week.
Yeah, and that's going to be prime time, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, we'll be talking about the Combine and who shined, who didn't, and then you start talking about the draft, and then you start talking about OTAs and mini camps and training camp. I mean, it never leaves your consciousness.
Now, football, it's year-round. It's a year-round job. And what I kind of like, what I don't like about this new deal, possible new deal, the three preseason games. I know a lot of people are asking for less preseason games, but I think about those XFL guys. Like, those guys have four games in the preseason. Well, some of these guys who were in the NFL, you got four games to kind of prove yourself. So now you've cut their chances down a little bit with three games. I know the veterans like it. I know the guys who are established like it. You get your three games, but always think about the underdog. Now that's one less opportunity for that guy to go. What I do like is the possible two buys. I think that's awesome. You let the body recover. You can add a game. That's fine. But the two buys are crucial. I think you'll see a lot of teams get healthier towards the end of the season with those buys. So there's some plus and minuses to this thing. I'm with you, Dave. More football. I get to watch three games on a Saturday instead of two. I'm all for it. So I'm excited about that.
Well, and some of the downside, I would say, and this is kind of counterintuitive. You're absolutely right, Michael, about the opportunities for guys to get reps. And some of the chatter about what the players, and it's always the veteran players. They always negotiate in these things that benefit them. So what do older players want? They want less contact in practice. You know, some
want
of those,
extend the career, save the body.
Extend their years. Yeah. And you know, the younger guys, they need that.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it's counterintuitive, but a lot of times less hitting means more injuries. Just because, I mean, there's not really that many injuries. You're not taking guys all the way to the ground. But man, like in the running game, and it's really hard on coaches, you know, because they're trying to get, how can this guy, when we're going full speed, can he get his fit on that defensive lineman? And you can't really duplicate that without pads, unless you're in full pads and going full blown. So, and a lot of those, like you said, the younger guys just aren't getting the reps. I mean, shoot, how many times have we heard that LJ Collier really suffered because he had that high ankle sprain during camp and didn't get reps in? Because once the season starts, you're not hitting at all.
No. Right.
So, yeah, that I think, you know, that's one thing where it does sound like something that the older guys are working in for themselves there, but I don't know that that is necessarily good for this game, but it's the way it's going right now. So, you know, and that's just something that we're hearing about right now. We're also hearing that this is going to be a 10-year deal.
Wow.
I think that would be unwise for the players to have.
Well, we got a couple of comments
have
here.
That long.
Yeah, Marcus Spears talking about, we'll play a couple of cuts here. If I can get this sheet rolling. Yeah, Marcus Spears, where the heck did it go? My sheet just refreshed on me. Oh, here it is. Here he is talking about why he likes that playoff, and then we'll get into a cut from Jimmy Palmer talking about James Palmer talking about different things here. Here's Marcus Spears on why he likes a 7-team playoff.
Do you like the idea of adding another playoff game, another playoff team in each conference?
I like the idea of that because you think about the time of the year and it's what was the first question I asked? Is it another game on top of that? But no, with the bye week, you'll see teams incentivized, especially to get that number one seed.
Yep.
Instead of having the opportunity to sit players down and try to figure out, you know, who can we rest up until this point, it's only one of those spots. And it is a clear advantage to be number one.
So he likes it. Let's go point by point. So the expansion of the number of teams going into the playoffs, I like it. What's the downside to that? The idea that, well, I guess everybody gets in, but you got teams that win 9, 10, 11 games every once in a while that don't get in,
depending
on how a conference does. So,
well, yeah, and sometimes in the division, you can, well, the Seahawks, no, they won it with a 7-9 record.
Yeah. So, I mean, tell me the downside to having more teams available.
Well,
do we feel like it's a watered-down product? Are we afraid that a team gets hot like the wild card Giants 9-7? Remember that? They knock off 15-1 Green Bay Packers.
Right.
Is that what we're afraid of? That's compelling. That's great, isn't it?
I think the downside for me would just be those two guys, the number one, number two seed. That two seed now doesn't have a week to get healthy. It's all about health in the NFL. Like,
right,
who's available and how healthy are you? With those two, with the number one, number two seed getting the bias, that allows guys to be healthy. So maybe it hurts the product a little bit, but
so you don't mind the addition of a team. You just don't like that the second seed no longer gets a bye.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I didn't like it at first. Like you said, watered-down product. Everybody gets in. It's not that way, though, once I looked at the percentages as far as other sports go. So, and I think that it should be something because that way every game matters, you know. And, you know, sometimes you might be able to rest. And if you know you're not going to get the bye, maybe, you know, different things, different strategies happen there. But, yeah, I like it. And I actually played in a season with the two bye weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first year in Denver, and it was a long season, man. But it was advantageous to have those 2 weeks off, and you almost felt like you were on vacation and like the season was over.
Yeah, you get. And by the way, people can text in 710-710 is our text line. Any thoughts on this that you have? You think adding more teams is a bad idea? You think or a good idea? Just give me a thought on that. Also, the idea of 17 games. A couple different thoughts. Here's Andrew Brandt, who was on with John Clayton, talking about adding a 17th game and this being a huge bargaining chip for the players, obviously.
The minimum salary, that's the owners. I mean, for the commissioner power, that's the owners. The revenue split, that's the owners. So what do the players have of value? And the value is extra games. And at one point we were talking about 18, and now we're talking about 17, and it could also dovetail with the international games. And I've talked it for years about a home schedule, not a home team, a home schedule in London, where you have 8 games and 16 teams a year. And these are things that could all jive in with the 17th game. So it makes sense, and I just hope, as we continue our theme here, John, that the players are getting measurable, commensurate value for giving that up and giving up, you know, the extra game in the playoffs, too, which is all revenue. And I know the owners are going to say, hey, it's more money, so it's more money in your cap. But they need to get concessions out of the owners for this, and mm-hmm. we'll see.
I saw something also. There's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. One was that you could have two veteran players with a up to $2 million that their salary would not count against the cap. And it was, I don't know, veteran, I think, is after your third year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you have a guy like, say, Jerron Brown that's making $2 million, that can be, it doesn't count against the cap. Mm. So there were some things like that. The other thing is, the one that caught my eye was Brazil. They're talking about playing games internationally and possibly a game in Brazil. That was mentioned.
Germany.
Why? Germany.
Yeah. Trying to expand the game. Make it a global game here, Bob.
I don't love that part of it. I got to be honest. No, sure. no offense to Brazil. I'm friends with a ton of Brazilian people. But
oh, the professor's Brazilian, yes, you know? Well,
he is, yes. My teacher is. But it's, first of all, I'm not sure what the appetite is there. They must obviously have a better idea if they're talking about that being a possibility. But I think it's hard to make that fair for the teams you're asking to go out there and play. Right, we're talking about Jacksonville's going to have a couple of games in London, and I guess it makes sense because nobody comes to see their games. But the team itself, is that not a disadvantage to the team?
I mean, they'll put it against the, you know, up against the bye week,
probably. I don't know. I don't love that. Here's one more from Brandt, just talking about you brought up the 10-year CBA agreement, and here he is addressing that.
The one thing you just said to me starts it off as, oh no, not don't do this, players. Is the simplest term of all, which is the term. 10 years, which they just got through, and I know they want labor peace, and they want continuity, and they want this for the networks to invest, and everyone to invest, and labor peace for 10 years, but from a player point of view, you know, the TV deals are going to kick in a couple years, and the revenue is going to go crazy, and they should take another look at things in 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So just starting out right there, you would hope the players don't lock in 10 years, have some kind of opt-out of this contract to begin with.
Yeah, that, to me, was the first thing that stood out. A 10-year agreement. I mean, look, we're talking about how much more revenue is going to come in. I mean, you know, we always talk about guys like Clowney getting $24.5 million in 2, 3 years from now. That's going to look cheap.
Yeah.
You know, this may be, some of these numbers may continue.
Cap will go up each year.
Yeah. So, you know, that I think that's too long of a period of time. But, you know, we'll see what comes out of it. There's a lot of good things, a lot of interesting things here. There's nothing so far that, except for, to me, and this is easy for me to say because I'm not out there practicing, but I do think they need more contact practices. I think it's going to be a lot harder on the coaches. And I think that it's counterintuitive. I know, I've said that earlier, but I think you need full-speed practices to duplicate what's going to happen out on the field, and I think that is going to actually take away a little bit from the quality of play.
To duplicate and evaluate, guys, like how can you truly evaluate somebody if you're not having some contact? But a plus that I saw that's coming from this deal is now that number one seed, that bye week they get in that first playoff week, they'll get compensated. They'll still get a check when initially they weren't getting a check. So I guess that's a plus there. But as far as the contact goes, I get later on in the season, maybe there should be a deal to where later on in the season, practices get trimmed down a bit.
After a week, such and such.
After a week, like 8, practices get trimmed down a bit. Because by then, you know who your team is. You know who your guys are.
Then you've got injuries you're dealing with. You're trying to get guys healthy, all that. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, good coaches will be smart about that. I remember my last year in the league, and it was Mike Shanahan. He came in. We would do 9-on-7, which is a full contact. You go through your drills. 9-on-7 is like the run game. It's not the pass game. It's kind of like the opposite of 7-on-7. You know, you got the two fronts. And then we would go through those and then take our pads off. And then the rest of the practice would just be jersey and helmet. But you're smart to do that. You want to save your players anyway, but just the NFL coming in and regulating it, because we know that they've gotten fined and things taken away from them because they've got a camera
too
there and they're
contact.
Like, oh, you're going too fast there. Two guys ran into each other and now all of a sudden you're getting fined.
Let's take two.
Take two.
The Cougs lost to Cal 66-57 last night. UW faces Stanford at 7 p.m. this evening.
Michael, you can play the role of Jim Moore here and express your disappointment in the Cougs loss.
By golly gee whiz, Cougs. I picked you to win at home, and you disappointed me again. The best thing going about Coug basketball is the basketball court itself. It's pretty cool. It shows Eastern Washington, Western Washington.
That's all you have to say.
That's
about
all I
got to
say. Right,
that was
the
a very Jim Moore comment.
Yeah, I like. We mentioned this earlier. The WSU flag flying on the Space Needle. Bonton didn't play, and then I saw Pollard. He was dragging in that UCLA overtime game, and he only scored 4 points. So
is he hurt? I asked before.
Yeah, I don't know if he was hurt or tired or sick.
Because we talked about it in that game. He was effective in the game we were talking. I can't remember who the opponent was, but
UCLA.
He had a good game, but he looked labored in running, like, and I saw a sleeve on his knee. I didn't know if he had a bad knee or what was. He just looked like he was really.
He had that Zion run. You ever seen Zion trot down the field? It looks like it hurts every single step.
Yeah. It just looks like his uniform's too tight. He wears a small uniform.
Ichiro Suzuki will be throwing out the ceremonial first pitch at Mariners opening day on March 26th.
And you know it'll be head to toe, full uniform, wristbands, the whole thing.
It was so odd last year. He was taking batting practice.
Throwing. Yeah.
Like you said, full wristbands. He's a coach. He's coaching, basically.
How about he shocks everybody and just comes out in T-shirt and jeans, hat on backwards? That would be the most stunning thing, right? See Ichiro like that?
Never heard Ichiro utter a word.
Really?
I have never heard him say anything. You?
Yeah.
Nah, I played a round of golf behind him. That's about it.
Oh, you did?
At Newcastle, he was up there. That's as close as I got.
Was he like burying cursing his putter into the green?
Cursing, hitting his bag.
Throwing beer cans everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, he did his retirement press conference. There's been moments where he's spoken to the press, and I've heard him. I've heard him, obviously, in the clubhouse, but speaking through an interpreter, but I heard the sound of his voice. It was lovely.
That was a huge deal last year when he retired in Japan, that last game. You see what he meant to all those other players, and I can't remember who we talked to. Maybe it was Marco, but some of the players are saying, man, I sit next to him and soak up everything I can. And he's very forthcoming with all advice and how to be a pro, and so just a great guy to have around.
Well, he'll be throwing out that first pitch, Mariners opening day game. That's March 26th, so looking forward to that. I'll be here in no time. All right, coming up, our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, joins us to talk about the latest news in Mitch Haniger's recovery and more. We'll get into all of that coming up. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the show, talk some football with him. But as we told you, it snuck up on us. You got spring training games happening this weekend for your Seattle Mariners. And joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline is our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. Hey, Shannon.
Hey, guys.
So give us the update. It sounds like Mitch Haniger's feeling good, positive about things. You had a chance to talk to him. What's the story there?
Well, he's positive about things because he really doesn't have much of a choice in the matter to go the other direction right now. He's got a long recovery ahead of him. Of course, he showed up in camp today, and it was really the first time that he's been able to travel since undergoing the back surgery. And if you have not been following along, that was the second surgery that he has had since early January. So he's been through a lot. He had a kind of sports hernia, or what it turned out to be actually was an adductor connector, but he is recovering from both right now. The back surgery was a discectomy that was more of a microtype surgery, less invasive. And now he's in camp, and it's going to be a while before he can do anything because of the two surgeries. So he's kind of limited to walking, no lifting, no twisting, no bending, anything like that. And in talking to Mitch and in talking to an independent doctor, the thing that's going to be the roughest for him is healing that core muscle. It's a tough, tough rehab. You've got to do everything exactly right, or you end up hurting yourself again. The back should heal while the core muscle is healing, but he's got a long road ahead of him.
Now, are these injuries all connected? That's what people imply. I didn't know that the back, that sounds, the discectomy is something I've been talked to about. I don't know that that's got anything to do with his initial injury. Is that how they view it?
Yeah, no, they're all tied together. When I talked to the independent doctor, that was my question because it didn't make a lot of sense. But the original surgery, you can end up coming up with a hernia type injury after that, mm-hmm. from that surgery. Anytime that you're going into core muscles, it's, as I said, even what he's dealing with right now, it's a tricky rehab. And what he discovered was it appears that he tore the adductor in August. And you might remember that Robinson Cano played an entire season with a double sports hernia,
yep.
two tears in his abdomen. And what happens is that you are able to work and you are able to build up the muscles around it, but those muscles don't heal without surgery. And so Mitch felt like everything was fine and everything, he was kind of coming back from everything. And then he started feeling it in his back. And he actually went and got a second opinion on it in September, and they still didn't see anything with it. It wasn't until he kind of turned things up in January, got the hitting going, got more twisting going, that he really started to feel the pain. The MRI this time showed, yeah, you've got a tear. So the tear, the adductor tear was probably tied to the original surgery. Either it happened on its own or he pushed it a little too hard or something went wrong in the rehab. And then the back comes into play because your core muscles are what stabilizes your spine. If your spine is not stabilized, that's when injury can occur. So that resulted. He had that taken care of, and now it's a matter of healing up and then getting on a rehab path.
Last one on that. Do they have even a general time frame they're thinking, like April, May? Have they said anything like that about his return?
No timeline. I mean, he's basically shut down from anything at least for 4 weeks right now as the surgery heals, as both surgeries heal. So I think you're looking at a much longer rehab and recovery, and then you've got to start tackling the core area. And that, again, if you don't get the good news on that is that once it's healed, it's healed. The bad news is you have got to be very, very precise in the way that you go about your rehab. Those are hard muscles to isolate, hard muscles to heal, and you've got to do everything, every step of the way, you've got to do it right to get to that point, and that's going to take some time.
Wow, I didn't know that we should be addressing you as Dr. Shannon Dreyer. I've never heard anybody have more knowledge of an injury. That was fantastic. On a lighter note, Shannon, I understand that Bob and I get to share twin beds in a room. Oh. We're going to make them into bunk beds. There's going to be so much room for activities.
I'm not sure how this is going to work. That is why I emailed Maura last week to give you guys the heads up.
All right. How are we going to fit on
it out between the three of you?
How are we going to fit on twin beds?
Well, me and Danny did it. So
yeah, but Danny's a miniature.
Yeah, and even Danny, even his feet were hanging over the edge. So, but hey, Shannon, on a serious note, Ichiro throwing out the first pitch March 26th. I guess I haven't even asked you this. What's going to be the role for Ichiro? What's he going to be up to this year?
He continues to be kind of a coach of sorts, and he is still trying to find what his role is. And the difference is last year he was going through a lot more, doing a lot of the playing things that he was out working out with the team. And this year they want him, okay, you need to do more on the coaching. And he's still dressing. He's still going through his workouts, but they want him more with the coaches in all of the meetings. He has been throwing batting practice. So he'll continue to progress along that and kind of figure out what it is that he wants to do. It's really funny because, you know, you've also got Franklin Gutierrez running around right now, who's going to be in a role similar to what Mike Cameron did last year and working with outfielders throughout the system, traveling a little bit here and there throughout the year to find out if that's something that he wants to do. Mike Cameron is expected in camp pretty soon. His role has been increased a little bit. He's going to do more of that. So a lot of old Mariner favorites running around in uniform. And, you know, it looks like you could actually field a pretty decent outfield from those guys. But I got to tell you, I mean, the stars of the show have been the young guys down here. A lot of interest in watching Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez. They have not disappointed. Logan Gilbert threw just an electric live batting practice today. That's been a lot of fun to watch, too. So you might not be familiar with everyone, but when they get out there and you start kind of connecting the names with what you've been reading about, it's actually pretty exciting to see them.
Hey, Shannon, I read somewhere that JP said he felt like he wore down towards the end of the season and he wanted to gain more weight. Have you got eyes on him? How's he looking?
I have got eyes on him. He's put on about 10 to 12 pounds. He's one of those guys that it is hard to put the weight on, but he did, even with that 10 to 12 pounds, look different. And he really devoted himself to a different kind of level of workout, to the point where bought a house down in Arizona. He's a California guy. Moved the dogs down there with him and worked out at the complex with James Clifford quite a bit, tackled the diet a little bit, and also did his hitting work, too. So you hear that story with a lot of guys and just kind of rededicating themselves to what they are doing, getting down here at the facility, if not other performance facilities around baseball right now. So, yeah, he looks good. And, you know, you think of him, and last year was almost a full year for him at the big leagues, and you just really don't know until you play that season what a difference that is going to be, that extra month, that extra 3-4 weeks, and what that does to you, as well as the pressure that you feel at the big league level that you don't feel in the minors. So he looks good. He looks ready to go. Another one who's standing out in that department is Jake Fraley. He's put on about 15 pounds. He really got wore down by the season last year. He's just 24, but he really attacked the diet this off season. Told me yesterday it's to the point where he's now a pescatarian. He's not eating any red meat or anything like that, just fish, dairy, and eggs right now. But he looks very good. And Kyle Seager looks a little bit different, too. He showed up at camp last year after his just total rehaul of the diet, of the exercise, and a lot of that was for mobility and so that flexibility, so he could get into hitting positions that he couldn't before. He has now built up a little bit, which he said was the original plan, that he had to kind of flush everything out, break down a little bit, and then was hoping to build up during the season. Had the injury, was not able to do so. He looks different, bigger, stronger than he did last year, but not the kind of dysfunctional big and strong that he was prior to that.
Hey, I also was raised Episcopalian. What did you say, Shannon? Pescatorian?
Pescatorian.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a vegetarian, but they eat seafood as well.
Eat fish. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Shannon, quickly before we head to break, just a quick thought on how the, and I know you wrote about this at 710sports.com, how the teams are going to have to change using the way they used video in the past in light of this whole Astros thing. What does that mean in a summarized way?
Well, we don't know yet. We know that this is something that has been brought up by Rob Manfred, but the video room, as you know, if you've been at Safeco Field, is right behind the dugout. And over the last 10 years or so, players have been going more and more into the video room during games, and they'll look at their swings, and a lot of times they'll look at strike three calls to see if the umpire got it right or not. And with what they're trying to do to try and stamp out as much as they can with the sign stealing, and last year they actually put people in that room there. Now there's now talk of not allowing players into that room during the game. And a lot of managers around baseball think that's a great idea. They think that it can be overused. It can be a little bit of a distraction. I mean, it can be helpful to a point where it was my swing there, but sometimes guys start obsessing about it, looking backwards too much in a game rather than forwards. So we haven't heard anything official yet, but there is a possibility that players could be banned, or at least their access lessened to the video room in games.
Shannon, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. I look forward to sleeping on those twin beds. It's going to be magic.
Good luck with that, Bob.
See you later.
Thanks, Shannon.
There she is, our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, joining us live from spring training. Coming up, should Emmett Smith be talking about other people's money? I thought that was rule number one. It was like Fight Club. You don't talk about it. But he is, and we'll get into that next with Bob, Dave, and more. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. It's 8
a.m. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The Professor John Clayton will join us at the top of the hour. A reminder to listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and the best part is it's free. It's free. Just download it on your phone. It takes Easy. 2 seconds. And do then it. Guess what? You can take us with you everywhere.
Could I do it in 2 seconds?
You could do it in 2 seconds.
No way.
Yeah, you could.
There's no chance.
You get it right there on your phone for free. Then you could just walk around and listen to us. You could listen to our podcast on there.
I don't listen to the show.
Listen live. You go back and listen to yourself and say, how did I sound there?
I hate hearing myself.
Do you?
Yeah. Every time I'm in the show, and when, you know, we'll do what we learned or whatever, if we ever tape it because there's something going on, it's like, shut up. Sounds so stupid.
That's you talking to yourself or Jim?
Yeah. Well, myself.
Okay. Well, for the rest of you that don't hate the sound of Dave's voice, you can download that app and have us with you wherever. You can get to the podcast, all that good stuff, or stream it live. Meanwhile, you guys, as football players, as guys that played at the highest level, have both repeated this. I think I've heard everybody that's played in the league say, you don't talk about another player's money. That's the one taboo. And I think you threw in, hey, you don't mess with the other guy's girls or their sisters or something like that. That was another one. But essentially, money is the taboo subject. You just don't concern yourself with what other guys are doing financially.
I'm glad to hear that, Bump. What years were you NFL? Like 7, 8?
8, 10.
8 to 10.
Yeah.
It was that way from 87 to 95. Those two things. Don't talk about another guy's money. Don't talk about his girl, his wife, whatever, especially.
Yep. Now, does that, as far as the money part, does that rule apply to former players, somebody who's not currently playing? I get it, a guy on your team. Mm-hmm. Talking about, hey, Bumpus is making X amount, I should make this. I mean, that makes perfect sense. You don't do that.
Player but, lobotomy is what you would say about him. He's had the player lobotomy.
And we're talking about Emmitt Smith.
He forgot what it was like to be a player. And I'll never take the player lobotomy.
Okay. Now, let's tell people what we're talking about. Emmitt Smith, we've talked a lot about Dak Prescott, the Cowboys. They haven't signed him yet. He's in line for a deal. We'll see how big that deal should be. They may franchise. Who knows what's going to go on with him. But Emmitt Smith was suggesting that Dak should take less than what he might otherwise make.
Dak has to understand and maybe take another perspective. The perspective may not be all the money that you get. It may be how much of the money you're willing to leave on the table, because the Cowboys is a marketable organization. So if you are the face of the franchise, instead of taking 35, would you take 28 and leave some for Amari and pick up the other 35 through endorsements?
Now, I'll say this just for context. He was asked. He wasn't saying, hey, guys, hey, I got a thought here on Dak and what he should do. He was asked about it, and he's looking at it from almost a fan perspective, like, yeah, I want him to keep all the talent. So in order to do that, he may have to take less so you can re-sign Amari Cooper. So I sort of get him from the outside, but I'm just wondering if that rule applies even as a former player. You don't talk about another guy's money.
Well, I just think all the players would go, oh, yeah, easy for him to say now, blah, blah, blah.
And he also held out, remember?
Emmitt?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he held out in his career.
How much was it over, do you remember?
I don't remember the dollar amount.
Well, I'm sure he could have taken a couple million less.
Yeah, they were still America's team at that time, the most popular franchise in terms of notoriety. You know, those endorsement opportunities, I assume, existed back then.
Well, who gets $35 million from endorsements? I mean, is that kind of money out there?
He's saying might get 35, but could you take 20?
He's saying
could you take 28?
It's not what it sounded like, but anyway, at least to me. But yeah, I think that's something that kind of goes without saying. Like, you don't need to say that, because that's kind of what everybody has assumed and kind of speculated on. What numbers could Brady have made? Because Tom Brady has supposedly taken the hometown discount, and that's not anything official. You know, there's not numbers. I mean, you can speculate on what he could have gotten if he'd gone out and got top of the market dollar. But, yeah, that's something that I think players would definitely consider going forward. I'm just curious how long it takes for that to be a thing, where it's more like, because these numbers are getting up to the point where my mom used to say, this is obscene. I mean, these are obscene numbers now, where $35 million a year. I mean, if you can get a player in and have success and, you know, maybe help the team out, would you take 30? Is 30 million enough? Maybe. I heard the phrase today, how many yachts do you need to ski behind, right? So that to me, I think that's a thing, but I think it's bad form by Emmett to call it out.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, and Emmitt's still part of the Dallas Cowboys organization in some way, right? You think of Emmitt Smith, you think of the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think he should call him out like that. I don't think he should take a pay cut either. I mean, Tom Brady takes a pay cut because wifey makes like $100 million. You know, it's easy to take a pay cut when your significant other is balling. So Dak Prescott, I think he should get his money. And it's more of a pride thing, you know? Like, hey, I'm Dak Prescott. These are my numbers. Yeah. I'm going to compare myself to everyone else in the league. If you want to win, you take a cut. I'd take a couple mil off the top, but seven, that's a bit much.
What if it is the difference between Amari Cooper being re-signed and not re-signed, and that's his main weapon, right? They're saying, hey, Dak, we love you, and if you want 35, we'll pay you 35, just playing that's the number. I don't know that it is, but if we do that, Amari's not going to be able to come back because he's going to make X amount of dollars for his services. So we're going to have to go plan B on receiver.
That's tough, man. That's really tough because you need the weapon. You need Amari to be there. But when I look at the NFL, not for long, right? They can cut you whenever they want to. No guaranteed contracts. So it's kind of like a mad dash for your money. If he feels financially secure, which he probably is already, he's coming off his rookie contracts. He didn't make a bunch of money, but he has the opportunity to capitalize on his attributes right now, I think you take the money. I think that, and Amari Cooper's a great receiver, but receivers are a dime a dozen. You can find some good receivers out there. QBs can
coming from a receiver.
Coming from a receiver. Yeah. I mean, QBs can make receivers better. You know what I mean? So yeah. I get it. I just think he should get his money.
Here's the problem with that, though. If all of a sudden you do take that cap-friendly hit, now all of a sudden you're like, well, what are you spending it on? What are you spending my money on, owner Jerry Jones?
You feel like you should have some say, right?
Yeah, or you might go, hey, why don't you take it from this guy? He sucks. You know, I don't see him out there. So, I mean, all of a sudden you start involving that guy in the process, then, yeah, it's all hell breaks loose.
I like that, though. You take a cut. He has some say on where that $7
yeah.
million goes.
I'll take 28 instead of 35, but I now get some say in how much you're paying this guy or
players
which guy you
play,
go after.
Coach is coach. Owner's own.
I like the other guy. I mean, you'll take it from him. He sucks.
That's great. All right, coming up, we'll see what the professor thinks about that, get his thoughts on this news of the CBA as well. All that stuff coming up as we continue with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.